Hi, this is Debbie Mayer in Hudson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, I guess so. I don't know about that.
We have 18 known listeners. Sometimes it's more than that.
Ellen, I just got word from the ratings group that we are the number one rated show on this station.
Who said?
Well, I kind of made that up.
We are the number one. You mean we get more listeners than anyone else?
Yeah, that's all it could mean, right?
Well, they're driving around in their cars.
That's why it's good to be on the drive
going
time
to work,
slot. Yeah.
Coming home.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to WJXC in the morning. I listen to Democracy Now.
Yeah.
And then I listen to Lincoln Mayorga.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just, you know, when I'm in the car, like you said, I just flip the channels now and then, and it's amazing, you know.
Yeah. It is. And keep us going here, folks. You know, we're making a new kind of constant request that you become sustaining members, because it makes it a lot, or supporting members. It makes it a lot easier, and will take the pressure of all these pledge drives we have to do. So if you can, yeah, as low as I, you know, I went on the site, Ellen, because I'm going to, instead of giving each pledge drive, I'm going to do like you're doing, give monthly.
Well, you know, it's kind of painless.
It's totally painless.
It works on your, it works through your credit card.
Right.
You have a chance at any time to change the amount you're giving every month, I believe.
Right. And it's as low as $5 a month. I mean, who can't afford that these days? It's a cup of coffee if you go to these fancy coffee places.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Heather Lloyd of Kinderhook, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Usually at this point, we would introduce our guest. However, given that today marks the end of our sixth year, we would like to take the opportunity to reflect on some of our best moments from 2020.
You are about to hear excerpts from shows with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Naomi Kabalkin Bunnenberg, Nina Heath, George Patterson, Thomas Reed, Jackie Lotz, Kyle Shea, Krista Mason, Christopher Labanka, and Brian Mulroney.
These are some of our favorite moments, and we hope that you enjoy listening to them as much as we do.
Now, I was doing a little bit of reading about knives. In 2013, a one-inch blade was discovered in Spain. It's 1.4 million years old, and it was carried by hominids. So the ancient ancestors of humans, hominids, like ancient hominids, yes, ancient people.
All right.
And obsidian knife blades are the thinnest of all blades. They're 3 nanometers wide, 10 times sharper than a razor blade, and those are made from volcanic glass. It's unlikely you're going to be using one of those. Some surgeons would like to use them for the incredible precision, but apparently they flake a little bit, and there's the chance that you could leave pieces of obsidian in the patient. So they have not been yet approved for surgical use. But so you're taking a quality chef knife. I'm thinking it's probably not obsidian. It's probably not going to be 1.4 million years old. Tell us about the quality chef knife you're going to bring.
So, it's funny. I'm going on vacation in
17 days now that I'm counting. But we were renting a house, and I know one of the first things I put on my list was that I need to bring one of my good chef knives, because I hate getting to a place and trying to prepare food with a crappy knife. It's not enjoyable. It makes preparing food absolutely a nightmare. I'm a little bit of a nerd. I do not consider myself a chef. I consider myself at best a line cook. But I do appreciate knife skills, and I want to be able to work quickly and efficiently, and I don't feel like if you have a poopy knife, you're going to do that. So I bring a good knife with me everywhere.
Julianne Fast?
Yes, sir. I took a couple of classes so I could do that, because I chopped the tip of my pinky off back in the day. Oh. I learned the hard way. So I invested in a few knife skills classes. But yeah. I know that having a good quality knife and making sure that it is sharp is critical to, prepping your food efficiently and effectively.
So, Brian, your first item that you would take on your Catskill cabin getaway is a Swiss Army knife. And these are manufactured by Victorinox. The term was actually coined by American soldiers after World War II due to the difficulty they had in pronouncing Offiziersmesser, which is the German officer's knife. So
yes.
Swiss Army's knife, that's the best I can do, sorry.
That's good. A customer gave me one as a gift. A guy called Andy Weir. Andy came in one time and he said, "There's a present for you." And I was really happy, but I didn't realize just how useful it is. It's got everything: scissors, a nail file, bottle opener, tin opener, three blades, two screwdrivers, all contained in this little thing that's about 3.5 inches long. And the quality is phenomenal. The quality is the best steel. It's just a great tool. So if you're going to be in a cabin in upstate New York, especially in the winter, I would want my Swiss Army knife with me.
Now, in the original television series MacGyver, as well as its 2016 reboot, MacGyver frequently used a Swiss Army knife. In particular, in one episode, he fashioned a poison dart blowgun to save himself from some assailants. Here's a little bit of trivia for you, gentlemen, if you're MacGyver fans, which maybe you are, aren't. What was MacGyver's first name?
Frank.
Frank MacGyver. What do you say there, Andy?
Stevie.
Angus MacGyver, and fitting for you gentlemen, it's sad, but I only just now realized that it's a Scottish name.
It is a Scottish name.
very Scottish name. But he was in the show embarrassed about his first name, so it went like this was a running thing for years where he would not say his first name.
Now one thing that I remember our former guest and my good friend George Patterson, he was on the show, and he wanted to bring a Swiss Army knife.
Uh-huh.
And he said, but no, the normal sized one. See, the big one you see advertised in the store. He said, I wanted to bring that one. I can just see him. A big giant knife, you know.
I know the ones. The promotional
like a
ones.
A bear or something, you know.
This one has an attachment for a battery, and it turns into a chainsaw. In your first item is going to be the jigsaw of the USS Greer.
Yes.
That FDR would be bringing on his Catskill cabin getaway.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways you could call it macabre in respect that it's a jigsaw of the first ship, American ship that was hit by the Germans in the Second World War. And you could say, well, why would they want to be reminded of such a travesty? But as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, he loved the Navy, and he played a big part in the U.S. Navy.
Assistant Secretary of the Navy.
Yeah.
Just like his cousin Teddy Roosevelt.
And I think the seas, and I think America overcoming the Germans and the Italians in the Second World War meant a lot to him. And this
actual incident, the Greer incident,
yeah,
I think that kicked off things for America in a very particular way. They began to give huge amount of financial assistance and started protecting, you know, the interests of the allies.
Yes, beginning to abandon neutrality.
Yeah, and I think that this jigsaw puzzle would be a reminder of what was to come and how he played a fantastic part in overcoming the access of evil during the Second World War.
Yeah, and you're right. He did have an affinity for the Navy, for sailing, for boating. He spent, when he had first contracted polio, time on a houseboat, kind of a little more solitary.
Mm-hmm.
And the day he...
Almost like a convalescence.
Yeah, and the day he got polio, he was at camp, I believe, with his family, and they had gone out on a boat, and they had seen a little fire on an island and put it out, and he came home and said he felt weird. Just limbs felt weird, his body. And so he went to bed, and when he woke up...
He couldn't walk.
Yeah, he couldn't get his legs to move. And such a bizarre thing, polio, this virus attacks. And there's no rhyme or reason as far as doctors could really tell.
One of the things that there were specialists were suggesting was that there's a possibility it wasn't polio. It was Guillain-Barre syndrome.
Oh, okay.
However, it's been concluded that even if it was I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Guillain-Barre syndrome, even if it was the treatments at the time wouldn't have been any different, and it wouldn't have made any difference to the conclusion of his physicality.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, terrible.
I did a jigsaw last October while I was off work for a couple of weeks, and I've got another one. My mum bought me one for Christmas, and I've not touched it yet. So I think the next couple of weeks, I'm going to make this into a solid item, a picture. There it's there for George to see and for you to see as well, mate.
Oh, look at that.
So this is an iconic picture.
It's a picture I actually have tattooed onto my arm.
That's right.
I'll get out of town.
So there you are.
Wow.
I'm going to do that jigsaw of the tattoo that's on George's arm. It's Billy McNeil, whose nickname was Caesar, and it's a picture of Billy holding up the European Cup, and he was the first Scottish captain to lift the European Cup in 1967.
Which is the premier club competition in soccer in the world. It's the world's number one competition. It's known as the Champions League these days.
But it's the most iconic, well, one of the most iconic pictures in Celtic's history. And that's
he passed away a year ago, Billy.
Yeah. Of Alzheimer's.
He did, yeah.
Which was unfortunate. And there's a big statue outside the stadium now of Billy. And it's, you know, a fantastic statue, beautiful statue. Right, so Thomas, your first item that you would like to take with you on your COVID Catskill cabin getaway is art supplies.
Yeah, so I said art supplies because, I mean, recently I've done some watercolours and, you know, working with chalks and stuff. Last year it was oil paints or acrylic, so, and obviously I like drawing. So I just take a variety of stuff because, I mean, during the lockdown, it's something that was really, you know, I was getting enthusiastic about again. And now that I'm back at work, it's kind of, I'm annoyed at myself. I've never done more than, you know, I bought stuff and never used it. Or, and it, you know, there's things there that I wanted to get done and never did. And it's, I'm going to find it hard to get it done or to find time. Because obviously when you're working, you've got kids. And...
Well, every time I spoke to you, you were painting, but albeit the kitchen and the hallway.
different types of painting.
And a serious note, Mike, Thomas sent me a picture that he drew for me, of Laurel and Hardy. So I'll show you it later on once we finish the show. It's beautiful. So
excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas.
It was I was the oil paint. It was the watercolors. I started doing a bit of watercolor paint.
Right.
So
that was
watercolors.
Very impressive.
No, I'm not. Actually, I'm far too lazy to be vegan. I could get by, I think, okay without meat, but I would miss fish too much. And I'll be honest, cheese. I really enjoy my dairy.
Yeah.
Right. But what Lulu's does really, really nicely. Have you guys had like the Impossible Whopper or anything?
Oh, yeah.
I've had the Impossible Burgers, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's like impossible that it tastes as close to beef as it does. And that was something that I think Lulu's and I think good vegan food does really, really well is it's like, nope, I don't even miss the meat. They had a like a buffalo cauliflower wrap and it tasted just like I was eating buffalo chicken. And I was like, nope, this is great. I'm sold.
Yep. Yeah, I've actually had buffalo cauliflower wrap as well. The local store here has a little cafe. And
How was it?
I don't like blue cheese, and I forgot to tell them to take the blue cheese off.
That would spoil it, I would think,
and
yes.
And it kind of tainted the taste for me. But other than that, you know, I've had buffalo cauliflower, and it's really, really nice, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah. No, I think the vegan recipes have come a really long way, and one of my favorite cookbooks right now is called Thug Kitchen, and it's basically, you know, give a bleep about what you put in your body, what you eat, and it's all these vegan recipes, and it's great. They have some really, really excellent stuff in there, and I'm all too happy to cook it. So
yeah, my girlfriend Julia's daughter Caitlin, she is vegan, and it's kind of taught me a few things, as you said, you know, about you know, there are a lot of meals that you can eat that you don't really have to think too hard about. But I think one of the things is you come home at night from work, you're tired, and you're like, right, would you prepare? You
right.
know, rather than just throwing a burger on the grill, you know, would you prepare? You know.
No, I'm absolutely with you, Andy, because 100%, because it's way easier for me to make. We don't really eat beef around the house since when my wife was pregnant 3 years ago. She couldn't stand the sight, the smell, the taste of beef. And so we had sort of gotten it out of our diets for the most part. And so we sort of never reintroduced it. We replaced a lot of things with like turkey. So we do like turkey burgers and really enjoy those. It's way faster and easier for me to make a turkey burger than it is for me to make like the lentil white bean burgers, that like the vegan burgers that are tasty. But you know, you gotta put them together. You gotta let them set and then make them so that they don't just crumble. And again, I'm with you 100%. You get home and you're just like, okay, how much time do I feel like investing in this meal? Yeah. This is the thing that's going on the grill.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we did on Monday. We actually had a meatless Monday with Beyond Burgers that I cooked up. And it was really good. I just made some patties. You can get kind of like a package of the ground Beyond beef and made patties, salt and pepper, grilled up some onions and some cheese. And you eat the thing, and with the seasoning and stuff, I kind of forget that I'm eating anything but a hamburger. Pretty good. You know,
Really... really good. So Andy, has your girlfriend's daughter, has she introduced you in recipes that you're like, this is a knockout recipe, I love it? Because I'm always on the lookout for more recipes. I do most of the cooking in my house, and I'm always looking for good recipes.
She does make good mac and cheese, you know, vegan mac and cheese.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So what she does is she soaks cashews overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And then she liquidizes them, and then she uses that as, you know, she adds ingredients, herbs and stuff, and that creates the creaminess of the cheese, and then she'll use vegan pasta, and hey presto, you've got some vegan pasta.
That's awesome.
You know,
that's
mac
awesome.
And cheese. It's really, really nice. There's like some cheeses, some you know, vegan pizzas and stuff like that. But as you said earlier, there's a lot of things, and Mike mentioned as well, there's a lot of things going on in terms of, you know, catering for the lazy people or the tired people like us that can throw on a Beyond Burger instead of a meat burger, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So there are companies catering to that, you know, rather than having to
make it,
you know, steep cashews overnight and all that, you know.
Just make it more accessible. I think a lot of us are, at least I know I was, sort of intimidated by all the prep that had to go into it and worried that it was going to come out bland. But ever since starting to cook from this cookbook, my spice cabinet has gotten a lot bigger. So I've got a lot more of those staples, and I feel like I'm not quite as afraid of trying a new recipe because there are so many good options for vegan food. And like you say, Andy, like as they make some of these more accessible so that I don't have to, you know, soak the cashews overnight and everything. I'm more inclined these days to sometimes just go, that's what I want. We've been trying to cook more since the pandemic started. But there are also nights where it's like, no, we're going to order takeout from a local place, see if we can't support it. And, you know, not that our business alone could keep anybody going, but really trying to focus on a lot of local places.
50 people say that, then, you know.
Exactly our thought. So we want to make sure that, you know, when we eventually come out the other side of this, that the places we really like, places like Lulu's, there's a great Ethiopian restaurant near us that we really want to make sure sticks around. So exactly like you say, if 50 other people are thinking the same thing, it's like, hopefully we keep them going.
Your first item that you'd like to take on your Catskill cabin getaway is
a foraging cookbook, bare bones, like survival. Like there's nothing there. I've got no electricity or anything, in which case I'd have to go and forage my food, etc. I have like the comforts of a nice spice cabinet. And,
you get nothing.
A refrigerator.
You get nothing.
All right. So then I'm gonna get a nice foraging cookbook, which I actually found a couple really good ones online, but Mark Bittman is the best cookbook writer. He works for the Times, and he has done one of my favorite cookbooks, which is How to Cook Everything. It's like a Bible. It's so big. And then he has How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. He just did How to Bake Everything. I think he has one that's like How to Cook Everything Fast. I love how all of his cookbooks have great stories before the recipe. So it's not just something to prepare. There's a story behind it, which I figured would keep me entertained while I am up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But if I really had to go out and get dirty in the dirt, I would want like a proper foraging cookbook.
No. Thomas, your next item or items is fishing equipment.
You know, you can't go into the woods or go camping or without taking fishing rod, or fishing line, you know, and be it fly fishing or be it bait fishing. Done it all, loved it all, and that just when you ask about going to the cabin, I just think of in the woods camping and with nature, and when I think of that, I just automatically think fishing. And if I go to these places and I don't fish, I feel as though I've missed an opportunity, even though most times I go fishing, I don't catch it.
Yeah.
You would love Mike's cabin. There's a little river right next to it. Beautiful, isn't it, Mike? I don't know if there's a fish in that wee river.
There is just little. They're called creek chubs. It's kind of like big minnows.
Right.
But there are some creeks. I have caught brook trout and some of the creeks in that area. But you have to find them. Brook trout can be finicky, I think.
In what way?
They're really sensitive to temperature. They're really intelligent, and they get spooked easily.
Sitting there with a pipe and all that.
Yeah. I say, that gentleman is trying to snag one of us. Shall we carry on downstream?
Yeah. Fish with an English accent?
Yes. Well, that's how they are in the Catskills. But,
that's how people do when they smoke pipes.
Yeah.
People sound when they smoke pipes.
Exactly. A lot of world-class fishing, trout fishing in the Catskills, fly fishing, the Esopus Creek, I believe, and some of the other waterways.
We had a few stories from one of our previous guests.
That's right. Judd Weisberg.
Judd Weisberg. Classic story. The final cast. Remember?
Yep. Biggest fish he'd ever caught in the Catskills.
Yeah, mate. Thomas, you need to listen to Judd Weisberg. So.
I think I did. I did listen to it.
Said salmon fishing is fishing of 1,000 casts. And it might be the 1,001st cast that you catch the fish.
Yeah. I've never caught a salmon.
No?
Did you have a Back to Basics book in school?
In school?
What do you mean by that, Kyle? Back to Basics book?
So there actually is a book that's called Back to Basics. And it's funny, for the longest time, up in Canada, this is one of the books that we had at the cabin. And for the longest time, I'd flip through it and would just, you know, read every page and every square inch of it. And, you know, what it actually talks about is everything from, like, you know, how to introduce cats to each other, to skinning a rabbit, to watering your garden, or like how to clear land and build a house, and with regards to things like the direction of the wind blowing. And it gets like super, super detailed, and it's just like this fun
raising livestock.
Yeah, it's got everything. It really has everything in it.
Enjoying the longest... harvest. Yeah. House the longest... skills and crafts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I knew every page of the book, and it wasn't until kind of recently that I realized that we had like the Canadian variant of the book. So when I actually saw like the US version, it was very similar in every regard, but it was just like some very small, I don't remember what the exact differences were, but
how to order a Big Mac at McDonald's. How to order a Big Mac at McDonald's. You always want a super size.
How to order your Nick Tahoe's garbage plate.
Hey, there's a good shout out to the Rochester region, the garbage plates.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, you two should know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, though, somehow, the first time I think I had a garbage plate was when I was dating my wife, Nicole.
Yeah?
That was the first time I'd ever had a garbage. Somehow, I never made it out to Rochester. I think I heard my uncle lived off of them for a while when he lived in Rochester.
But, God, how long did he last?
He's still kicking. He's doing good. He was actually in the... It was during his, I think, his bodybuilding years. So I think that's how he kept himself in check. But for the listeners who don't know, a Nick Tahoe or any restaurant in the Rochester area, a garbage plate is a couple hot dogs, a couple cheeseburgers thrown on top of baked beans, macaroni salad, coleslaw, and it just looks like a plate of garbage.
And a meat sauce over the top of it.
Yes.
And you usually get one when you're drunk.
Lots of red hot
it tastes beautiful. And then you wake up in the morning and you go, oh my God.
It's true that the establishments are frequented by inebriated youth in the wee hours of the morning.
They are delicious, though. We've tried to make them. We do yearn for them sometimes out here in California.
Hey,
what's
you
it
could...
called out there? A Golden Gate.
Hey, that's pretty good. Oh my gosh. Kyle, you and Jenna have to open a restaurant.
A Golden Gate plate.
Yeah. And, hey, you know, now there's Beyond Beef. There's Impossible Meat. You could have a pretty wicked vegetarian. And it would taste just like a regular garbage plate. But it would be entirely even vegan. You could do even a vegan garbage plate. It'd be really good.
Put on some faking as well.
Do that? Yeah. I don't know if they've come along quite as well with that. But, like, Impossible Meat, Beyond Meat, that stuff is good.
Yeah, it's not bad, yeah.
I've used it for, especially Impossible. It's just not that. I was looking online today. It's like $70 to have 20 hamburgers shipped to your house. So it works out to be like $12 a pound or something. And it's just like, that's a lot for a hamburger. But I don't know. I wish they would sell it in stores. It's not quite in stores here yet.
They do sell it in stores.
Like Wegmans, but not anywhere around me. Impossible.
Well, if I see some, I'll bring you some up.
That'd be awesome. I'll pay you for it. Stock me up. I'll fill the freezer.
You're right. You'll pay me for it.
$200 for 5 cheeseburgers.
I'll cook it and I'll be like, no. No.
But. Yeah.
That's when Mike snapped.
Give me my cheeseburger. Now, your next item that you would like to take on your Catskill Cabin getaway, Chris, is a notebook and pen. Mm. What would you be doing with this notebook and pen?
So this is what I have learned about myself over the years. I have found that things slip through my mind. If I think it's important, I can retain totally useless factoids and information. But I can't retain anything that's important, whether it be an idea for a play I'm working on or an educational program or whatever, or a chore that I have to take care of. So I have taken to writing everything down, especially because what I've also learned is that I could be working on something. I might be working on a grant proposal, and I think, ooh, this is a thing that I should take care of. And what I'll do is I'll switch gears and I'll start doing this other thing. And so I've really tried to break the habit of jumping from project to project or from thought to thought. And the only way I can do that is by parking lotting it. So
yeah.
I have my, you know, I've always got a pen and paper handy. Because physical is not the word I'm looking for, but I am a very physical person. I'm a very tactile person is the word I'm looking for. A very tactile person.
Tactile, so, textile,
electronics.
Made of wood.
Yeah, no, not quite that. I need something.
He's gonna have a hard time against the dragon.
Hopefully, I don't ever reach that point of needing a wooden leg. Hopefully, it's made of a nice wood, I suppose. I write things down so that I don't lose them, but also I can put them out of my brain.
Have a bamboo leg.
Except if it is it going to grow under me? Because if it's going to grow,
you wake up in the morning, you're 2 feet tall,
cockeyed, right?
2 feet more larger than you were the day before.
Yeah, like I'm growing, but only on one side. It, I don't know that it'll work.
Need one of those shoes with a giant sole.
Yeah, I'll just get different shoes for my left foot if I have to replace my right leg. That's all, and I'll eventually be on stilts. So I find that I write these things down, that gets them out of my brain, so I don't have to think about them anymore. But also I often have ideas for maybe plays I want to write or a board game idea that I want to try. And so I find that if the idea hits me, if I have the luxury of sitting down with my notebook and writing it all out, I write until I can't write anymore. And then I'm done. And if I come back to it, great. And if I don't come back to it, that's fine too. But at least I have a record of it. I don't have to worry about whether or not I remembered it. And if I'm really trying to do something else, you know, if I'm reading at the time, or if I'm just trying to relax, or especially if I'm trying to go to sleep, if I write it down, I don't have to worry about whether or not I'll remember it. I don't have to think about it anymore. So now I can just get on with what I was doing. So it's a production tool, but it's also a relaxation tool for me.
Chris, you think of the last factoid that you wrote.
So the last thing I wrote was an idea I had for a book, maybe wherein everybody has, as a race, humans have decided for one reason or another, that the planet is worth saving. But the only way to do that is to make sure that humans no longer exist. And rather than trying to wipe humanity out, they've basically just decided, okay, there won't be any more of us. We'll age out and we'll gracefully make our exit. And for whatever reason, that's the agreement that has been decided upon. Except there's somebody who has learned of a couple that has had a child, and that's against the law. And he's decided that it's humanity is not making a graceful exit. It's not okay to even though they should never have had this child, it's not okay to dispose of the child just because it wasn't in plans for humanity. The idea hasn't gone any further than that. I can just tell you that's the last thing that I wrote down. Physically, that I was like, I don't think this is anything. It could be something. I'm going to write it down. So that way, if it's garbage, it's garbage and it never leaves my notebook. But if it's something that I want to use later, I don't have to try and remember what that idea was.
Nice. Right. Good thinking. And, you know, again, thanks so much for having us here at your bakery, Nina. I was wondering, is there any one item that you're particularly fond of baking? Is there anything you come here and you think, yes, I get to bake this today and I love doing that?
There's a couple things. I'd say one of the biggest things are bagels for me. I love making bagels. It's just, you know.
Can I ask, are bagels boiled?
Yes. Well, New York style bagels are boiled. Yes.
So how does that work?
So you make the dough, and for me, it's a 2-day process. And then you refrigerate the dough overnight, and they're in their bagel shapes. And then in the morning, you get up, you turn the water on, you put in some flavoring, and then the boils are bageled, and then they're the bagels are boiled, and then they're baked.
Right. Interesting. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no. That's really fascinating. Now, the whole process.
Don't say it, Nina. Mike, how many is in a baker's dozen?
12.
13.
13?
That extra one.
Why?
In case one of them wasn't up to standard, that way they still had 12.
You know, I've been to plenty of donut shops, and when I get...
No. You've been to fake donut shops because they're mass-produced in a farm somewhere.
Hey, either way, man, if that baker's dozen is 13, I want 13.
If you go to DD, right, then the chances are that if you ask for a dozen donuts, you're going to get 12.
Right.
But a baker's dozen is?
13.
13. So they should give you 13.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever been to a place like, I believe, Lox of Bagels in Saugerties? On their list, it says baker's dozen, I believe.
Yeah?
At least the last time I was there, I'm pretty sure it did.
Interesting.
And you get 13 with that.
13 bagels.
Yeah. See, that's important.
The right number. Donuts.
Although, you know, having just learned that, although this is probably something that I've learned in the past and forgot. Like, I'm sure if we were to look back on some previous episode, that was something that came up and I was like, wow, fascinating. I never knew that. I'll remember it for the rest of my life. And here we are again. And I'm like, wow, that's really fascinating. I never knew that.
But you will. You'll, in the recesses of your mind, one day you'll be like, hey, it's 13.
13. And it'll prevent me, like when I do order a baker's dozen, from being like, oh, they put an extra one in here. Do I need to go back and tell? Should I pay for it? What do I do?
Baker's dozen.
Yeah, it's just the way that it is.
Nina, what time do you start work?
I start work at about 7 in the morning.
That's relatively early.
It's kind of early, but I...
No. It's relatively late.
Yeah.
For a baker.
Yeah, because I do a lot of my prep work at night. I'm a night person. I'm not a morning person. So waking up early in the morning is tough for me. So I would rather stay here late and do my prep work.
What's late?
8 or 9 o'clock sometimes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Sometimes later.
13-14 hour days.
Yeah, they definitely can be. Some days, you know, I get to get out of here around 5:30. It's still a 9-hour day or 10-hour day. But.
So relatively, you know, you Mike asked you, "What I get to bake this? This is fantastic." And you said bagels.
Mm-hmm.
What's the thing you hate making?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know if there's anything I hate making. I guess.
Or you say, oh, I need to make 15 of them today.
I would say it's more the elements of the things. Like I make lemon meringue tarts that I'm known for, and the tart shells, I hate making those. Mm. I hate it. It's such a pain.
Like, they break or something?
You have to roll them, and you have to set them in a little tart shells, and then you have to bake them, and sometimes they break when you turn them out. It's a pain.
Nick, can I ask, can we taste one later?
Of course.
We've got to taste them, Mike. We've got to taste. I mean, we're in a bake. We can't leave without actually tasting the products.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm looking at the menu here. I see cinnamon rolls, muffins, crumb cake, raspberry crumb bars, bagels, scones, Danish... blondies?
Mm-hmm.
What's a blondie?
Blondie, some people call it a blonde brownie. I think it's very different, but it's like kind of like a, in the brownie form, it's got white chocolate chips, walnuts, and pecans.
But blondie to me is a singer.
Yeah.
Now, and I also see brownies, cookies, and I see cupcakes. I don't see a cake in here, but I know that you make cakes.
Yes.
I saw pictures online of beautiful cakes.
I did see them as well, I have to say.
Yes.
Of our previous guests, Lauren, saw the rainbow cookie cake?
Mm, yes.
She said to me on Friday, make sure you bring me back some rainbow cookies. And I said, I don't know if they've got any rainbow. I'll do what I can.
I may have some put away. I'll check.
So plenty of cake. But I'm wondering, have you ever had cake by the ocean? Nina.
I think I have on a cruise ship once, probably.
Nice. And that's the title of your first song, Cake by the Ocean, co-written by Joe Jonas, Justin Tranter, and the Swedish duo Mattman and Robin. And why that song, Nina?
You know, I felt like I just had to. I make cakes almost every day, so I felt like I had to put this song on there. And it's one of those songs I can always dance to. And one of those days where it's a 14-hour day, this song comes on, I still have to dance.
So have your foot tapping.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So I love this song, and I was a big fan of the Jonas Brothers back in the day. So
can I just say, the Jonas Brothers back in the day? That just makes me feel old.
It's over for us, Andy.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, man.
You know, when they say like old people stay indoors because of coronavirus, that's us, Mike.
Yeah, that's it. That's all. This is, no. Well, we had a good run. You know, as an aside, I advise the weightlifting club, the fitness club at school, and I like to maintain a CPR certification. And, you know, it never really occurred to me for whatever reason, like, holy smokes, Jackie is probably a CPR guru master, I suppose. I'm assuming you've had to perform CPR.
Absolutely. Yep. CPR, basic BLS, is something that is a minimum, as well as ACLS, which is advanced life support. And then respiratory therapists are also required, at least for my particular job, NRP, which is neonatal resuscitation. And there are so many other certifications that respiratory therapists can do. There's PALS for PEDS, as well as, adult critical care certifications, pulmonary function certifications. So respiratory therapy sometimes, I think, is a forgotten profession. It's so vitally important, and I'm glad to bring some things to light for people to see just exactly what respiratory therapists do and how important part of a team we are. We bring a lot to the table to take care of patients.
Well, that kind of takes us on to one of the main reasons that we have you on today, Jackie. Obviously, in the last 3, 4, or 5 months, things have taken a turn for the worst in this country, or around the world, rather. Obviously, with COVID-19, can you explain to us, how has that impacted you on a personal level? How has that impacted your job? And how has it impacted you on an emotional level?
I think let's go with the emotional level. It certainly has been quite a ride since the beginning, you know, when we were starting to see Wuhan and everything that was happening there. And then as it started to happen in Seattle and everybody was watching and we were starting to prepare, and just really not knowing enough about this, and with more and more information coming in, it was really scary not knowing how we were going to take care of all of these people and what we were going to be in for. So I think scared was really my first initial feeling. Mm-hmm. I certainly do remember when SARS was in Toronto back many years ago. And we were watching that very closely, and that was very unnerving and scary. But then knowing how big this was getting, I think scared and fearful was my first feeling. For the hospital, we really started preparing early on, and luckily we were getting a lot of good direction from the state and starting to see what was going down in New York City. It's really interesting to see how, in a short period of time, we were required to increase our beds by 50%, and as well as, you know, the direction of the hospital was that they were going to stop all elective surgery so that we could accommodate a surge, and a surge that we didn't know how big it was really going to be. There was just no knowing. And just the constant preparing, and of course the big word was ventilator, and a respiratory therapist is somebody that runs your ventilator. And in the little hospital that I work, we have 4 ventilators. So you can see right how we would feel very overwhelmed.
You get 10 people that come in the hospital with breathing problems, there's 4 ventilators.
Correct, yes.
That's it.
And so luckily we are with Rochester Regional Health, and so our sister hospitals, we were all in very good communication and working well together to figure out how we would best manage the patients of this area.
You know, I wanted to add that, Jackie, as a respiratory therapist, of all lines of healthcare workers, you are truly the center lineman in this whole deal of a pandemic, because in terms of human communicable disease, you have horrific things like Ebola.
Yes.
Ebola is a terrible, it's like 90% fatal. It can only be transmitted, though, through like touching a person, through bodily fluids and things. Same thing with like HIV. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, despite these diseases being so horrible, they at least can be contained. The other thing about those is generally people are shedding when they're symptomatic. And I think in the case of a respiratory illness, the danger is that it's transmissible simply through breathing. It's transmissible simply by touching your face and then touching something, and someone else touches that something. It's way more communicable.
Correct.
And in that way, it can be, and also asymptomatic transmission.
Yes.
That's the other problem. And so,
could you speak a little bit more about that, Jackie? Sorry to cut you off, Mike.
It's okay.
You know, so you must have a lot of anxiety and fears around the transmission of COVID-19.
Sure. Absolutely.
You must have an acute awareness of specifically why that is. Could you maybe, in an effort to maybe teach somebody who's listening,
yep,
why it's very important to wear a mask?
Absolutely. So Mike is right that, you know, this is very transmissible through coughing, sneezing, sometimes breathing, just normally. If you're asymptomatic and shedding the virus, you can be shedding that virus to surfaces and anyone else. So wearing a face covering and an appropriately worn one, which means over the nose and mouth, to protect...
Not pulling it down to talk to somebody and then putting it back up?
No, or not wearing it under your nose or under your chin, because then you're really not protecting yourself or anyone else. And since this is so communicable, that's why wearing the mask is so darn important, as well as that hand washing. And if you haven't washed your hands, really try hard not to touch your face. I see a lot of people out in the community wearing gloves, and those gloves are great as long as after you take the gloves off, you sanitize your hands before you touch your face to take the mask off. And so there's all those little dynamics to it that, yes, covering your nose and mouth is vitally important to helping stop the spread of this virus.
And New York, thankfully, has followed these guidelines, New York State, pretty well since March. And, you know, talk about flattening the curve. The state, at least so far, has been really textbook with that. And Jackie, can you talk at all about what does that mean to flatten the curve?
Would there be any reading going on?
That was the original thought, but now my mind has expanded to what we could do here. No, I don't get to read much anymore, or like at all. So I would love, if I was going to like go away somewhere by myself and I didn't have Simon to entertain me, then I might as well bring a thick book and actually read.
Right. Are there any particular genres of books that you're interested in?
Couple few. I like...
The genre
I prefer. I like fantasy, and I like, actually like horror books, but I won't watch a horror movie.
Yeah. Stephen King?
I used to like Stephen, I don't remember what I've read of Stephen King, but like, I remember I read like one Stephen King book. I liked crappy books like R.L. Stein.
And, oh yeah. Yeah. Goosebumps.
He had a Fear Street.
Is that
Street.
The name of the book, or is that what happens when you read the book?
It's a series of books. Yeah. Yeah.
Goosebumps. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Goosebumps.
It's a series of books that R.L. Stein wrote, and each, you know, individual book would be a different story, but that, you know, as Naomi says, is you're also meant to be, they were meant to be scary for little kids.
Ah, right.
But he also actually, I think it was before that, he wrote Fear Street novels.
Okay.
And Fear Street was much creepier.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
But that I can control. I can't control a movie, so I know.
When I was growing up, there was, you know, TV programs, but I think there was actually books about this as well. Hammer House of Horror. These were like scary shows, and I was like, wow, Hammer House of Horror. And when you look back, if you watch them now, you'd be like, that is so rubbish, you know. But when you were a kid, you know, it makes you scared, I suppose.
I want to read Secret Machines, in part by Tom DeLonge. It's Tom DeLonge, the singer from Blink-182.
Yeah.
Apparently these books are kind of about these things that the Navy has been seeing, these objects, and supposedly in kind of a fictional way weaves together the nonfiction, supposedly, according to Tom DeLonge and all these advisors and stuff surrounding him. So if you guys are familiar with any of that's been going on. But I want to read the books. There's a whole series.
Yeah, I would like to read them as well.
Yeah.
You guys get back to me on that.
Yeah.
Let me know how they pan out.
Brian, your next item is a very influential book. To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read the book? And
I've read the book about three or four times, I think, yeah.
Right. So,
and watched the movie about six times.
Right. What is that? What is it about this book, this movie,
that intrigues you?
I think I've always been interested in the Black civil rights movement. And this book epitomizes what's good about America, the fight for social justice, the fight to make things right. And Atticus, despite the pressures around him from the white racist community that he lives in, this tiny little community, the white supremacists, Atticus sticks to his guns, represents the accused in court, actually loses the case, which is the sad bit of the book, but Atticus is such a good guy. He stands up for what's right, and he's the good side of America. The side I'd love to see coming back, you know, the social mm-hmm. justice side.
Yeah.
But right now it just seems so far away. But the whole book, it's an old-fashioned book. It's a bit naive at times as well, but you can't help but like the characters. Atticus, played by Gregory Peck, Scout, his daughter, Jem, the brother, Tom Robinson, the accused. It's just a book and a film that I can go back to any time and watch or read again. I love the book, start to finish.
Right. Excellent.
Very simplistic, but it's got a good message in there. You know, if you stand up for what you believe in, that's the right thing to do.
And you know, Brian, in America, mm-hmm. the question in many people's lips is, have we moved on?
No.
And this year, especially with the killing of George Floyd and Breonna, the circumstances that happened,
Breonna Taylor,
I can argue not. And
no, and
that makes the book even more important, doesn't it?
It should be taught. It should be mandatory reading in every school. That in 1984 by George Orwell, which would have been my second book if I could bring two books with me. But it's just a good story, a great movie.
Do you have any Glasgow words that you think that you could test Mike with?
Yeah, scunnered.
Scunnered. Mike, any idea what scunnered means?
No idea.
It means you're perturbed, you're frustrated and disappointed. If you're scunnered, you're perturbed.
It sounds right.
Hey, here's one for you, Mike. I'm going to give you ABC multiple choice.
Okay.
What's a square go? Is it a yogurt? Is it a pizza? Or is it a fight?
Fight.
Yeah. Well done. A square go.
What a square go.
You mean, is that a pizza? I don't understand. What do you mean?
A square go, no.
Do you have any words that you use in Batavia, where you're from, Mike, that maybe are unique to Batavia?
I do, but they aren't nearly as interesting as anything. I saw a YouTube video on Glaswegian colloquialisms, and I mean, it is legit. There are phrases that coming out of Glasgow that it's like I was thinking about it today. It's almost evolving into another language.
Well, it always was. It's a separate language. It's just it's been classed as a colloquialism for generations. But it, you know, old Scots, a mixture of old Scots, Gaelic, the German roots of English, you know, it's all there. It's its own language. It always has been.
Cool.
But when my wife first came to Scotland and met people like Andy, she couldn't believe. It was almost like we were speaking in code. Yeah. So when you go down to Calabria and Sicily and Italy, and if you go down there with a working knowledge of Italian, you still don't understand what the locals are saying because it's almost like code they speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So out in Western New York, we don't have anything quite that great, but I do have a list of some things. The best is probably pop. What is pop?
It's just like we would know pop as a brand of pop music, a brand of popular music, or some sort of soda.
And yeah, that's pop in Western New York is soda. So
yeah, is it like all flavors of soda?
Anything.
Pop's a generic name.
It's just a generic name for, hey, mom, could you get some pop at the store today? And that could mean ginger ale, root beer, Coca-Cola, anything. Could I have some pop?
In Glasgow,
the equivalent word
is ginger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bottle of ginger.
A bottle of ginger.
You mean ginger ale?
No, ginger.
Ginger. Coca-Cola passes as ginger. Iron Brew is ginger. Everything that is a soda pop type drink in Glasgow is ginger. That's just the way it's always been.
So let's use some of these terms. Mike's inability to speak about pop in Glasgow would frustrate people to such a degree that they would attempt to ask him for a square go. but what is that? Another thing that's kind of funny, I don't know if this is really true, I found it online, Judas Priest.
Oh, yeah.
Now
it's a band.
It's a rock band, but it's also Western New York
as well, isn't it? It's a sort of like goddamn it kind of thing.
That's exactly right, George. Yeah. How do you know that?
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard people use that exclamation, but only after I knew the band Judas Priest, the Sheffield rock band. But I'd heard it in some. I think it was some old Midwest movie set in the Midwest, the American Midwest, and someone used the, you know, the exaltation, Judas Priest.
Yeah.
All Western kind of thing.
Well, it caught on in my family because, in particular, I'll give you an anecdote. My dad is about 6'5". He's a really tall guy, 6'5". And we have
the height of Andy's dad and my dad together.
Yeah, you know. And we have a basement at home, back at home, and the ceiling's low. And many a time he'd be doing work down in the basement on a Saturday, and I'd be down there, and all of a sudden you hear Judas Priest, and he walking a little too fast, stepping a little too high, bam! And he, Mike, is my head bleeding? And but that's what he would say, Judas Priest.
When we were kids, she still is Irish Catholic. So any time there was a toe stubbed or a mark of, you know, frustration or annoyance, it would be sweet baby Jesus. Or she'd call on all the saints, and it'd be a quite lyrical, you know, exaltation of the saints and angels. Holy Mary, Mother of God, that kind of thing.
Those were some of our favourite moments from last year. Both of us are looking forward to 2021 and the fun that we will have getting to know our future guests that little bit better. We would like to thank you for listening throughout the past year, and to end the show, we would like to reflect on some of our guests' responses to our trademark question.
How do you take your coffee?
Well, Andrew has made fun of me for how much cream and sugar I put in my coffee and tea. But I have cut down on the sugar. I still like, I've actually switched to like light cream or heavy cream, so that it's a little...
Make your mind up, light cream or heavy cream, what is it?
It doesn't matter. It's more than half and half. I can settle for either, but as long as I've got some substance to it, I can do without the sugar. So yeah.
Well,
I try to do less sugar.
I take it, I like to make an espresso probably twice a day, but it's a very large espresso. A little coffee maker I've got, so I tend to do a little pot espresso, half a cup with a sugar, one spoonful of sugar, maybe a little bit extra.
Tablespoon?
A tablespoon would probably be